You're tuned to WDIY Classics on WDIY Allentown, listener-supported community public radio. My name is Waldemar Vanofskis. I'm your host for this Friday edition of WDIY Classics, and we're here to talk about a special pair of concerts coming up April 26th and 27th here in the Lehigh Valley. We're inviting you to join 200 singers of the Lehigh University Choral Arts and Symphony Orchestra in a tribute to the bicentennial birthdays of two titans of the operatic world. The Lehigh University Choral Arts is presenting a program entitled Wagner and Verdi. The Lehigh University Choral Arts, under the direction of Dr. Stephen Samets, will be presenting this program along with 60 professional instrumentalists in the Lehigh University Choral Arts program on Friday the 26th and Saturday the 27th of April 2013. Dr. Stephen Samets is the Ronald J. Ulrich Professor of Music and Director of Lehigh University Choral Arts, which is one of the country's premier choral art programs. He also serves as the artistic director for the elite a cappella ensemble, the Princeton Singers, and he is the founding director of the Lehigh University Choral Composer Forum, a summer course study designed to mentor emerging choral composers. He is a frequent guest on our program, and we welcome him back here to WDIY. Good morning, Dr. Samets.
Good morning.
So glad that you're here. It gets bigger and bigger. If all of the wonderful programs you haven't presented already this year haven't been fabulous and fantastic and awe-inspiring, how else could you crank it up but Wagner and Verdi? It's a major musical moment here in the Lehigh Valley.
Well, we're ending our 2013 season with a bang. So we usually pull out all the stops in our April concerts, and this is no exception. There'll be 200 singers on stage. There'll be a full symphony orchestra, and we'll be essaying some of the major repertoire written for choir and orchestra by these two exponents of opera, Wagner and Verdi. Very different in styles, of course. Wagner, an exponent of a sort of northern German school, and Verdi very much in the sunny south of Italy. It's a lot of work to stage this kind of a concert because you're pulling a lot of different kinds of threads together to make a cohesive program for people. But I think one of the ways we structured this is to the entire first half of the concert will be excerpts from Tannhäuser, Wagner's fifth opera, a story that mixes mythology with history. It's set both in the Venusberg, this mythological realm, and in 11th century Germany, in what was then Thuringia. So the title character, Tannhäuser, keeps bouncing back and forth. So we're going to kind of explore his world in the first part of the concert. And then in the second part, we're going to do both sacred and operatic works from Giuseppe Verdi, pieces from his Quattro Pezzi Sacri, his four sacred pieces. We're doing the Laude alla Vergine, the Laud to the Virgin, and the Stabat Mater, a beautiful extended work, religious work, but also shows Verdi's character still in this kind of warm, humanistic way from the South. So there's a terrific contrast built into the concert, but it also hangs together because of these two composers are frequently compared. They were compared during their lifetime. They've been compared ever since. They actually didn't have much to do with each other during their lifetime. That might have been quite intentional. They seem to avoid each other. And when they were compared to each other, they, I think, raised an eyebrow and walked away. Wagner actually went to a performance of the Verdi Requiem, and his wife, Cosima, wrote in her diary that the less said about his response to this, the better. When Verdi went to Tannhäuser in Paris in 1861, he came away saying that the overture was matto, it was madness. So they had a few words for each other. And when people compared them, they basically kind of just walked away from it.
Now, is this a, I'm going to say, an artistic temperament, or are these just radical cultural differences? You know, when I think of Wagner, I think of, you know, sort of stoic Northern European, you know, German, you know, it's cold winter and they eat lots of root vegetables. When I think of Verdi, I think of Southern Italy. I think of, fish and sunshine and olive oil and garlic and sort of this more, romantic sort of culture.
Is that, are the cultural differences there in play, or are, you know, a lot of great artists have large egos. Was there some, you know, sort of, or just artistic temperament, like, can't do it as good as I can do?
I think both things are at play, for sure. Definitely there is a difference in the northern and southern temperament. I think Wagner is living in this world of kind of northern, colder, an attitude which actually he uses in his operas, because most of his operas, like Flying Dutchman or the Ring Cycle, are set even further north. And the idea for Germany of going to this extreme northern realm, what was called Thule sometimes, the end of the known world, sets his operas in this kind of wasteland often, where man doesn't have a place, but gods come into play. So that Ring des Nibelungen is basically a story where it's not so much about man as God. In fact, there's an Italian patriot, Giuseppe Mancini, who is quoted as saying, Germans are God without man, that it is basically about the gods, and that Italian is basically man without God. So it's the other way around. And but the Germans, basically, you can kind of almost sense it. You know, if you're living on the edge of the, you know, Black Forest or something, it's easy to kind of see monsters lurking in the forest, or hobgoblins or dwarves or fairies and dragons, this kind of population that comes into the operas of von Weber or in Wagner. It's a very Germanic attitude. But in Italy, where you've got things a little bit warmer and the landscape is much different, you don't have that. You have a very kind of human attitude. So Verdi's operas tend to be much more about the human condition and people in love. Even if it's an Aida, it's a love triangle, but it's a soap opera love triangle. And it's about the kind of very emotional content that comes with this. But that's an attitude of North and South. When you talk about the actual temperament of the artists, interesting. I mean, Wagner, for all his German stoicism, was something of a Latin philanderer in his own life. He basically used people a bit. He, you know, was after self-promotion. He frequently seduced the wives of the people that he was also interested in taking their money. So Wagner had a certain self-purpose. Verdi, on the other hand, seems to have been relatively staid in his habits. You might think he was the more Latin, you know, Italian, but he spent his life on a farm on Sant'Agata. He loved farming. He was a philanthropist. On the other hand, he was not above stealing away the leading lady in Aida, Teresa Stoltz, from her then paramour, the conductor of Aida. So I'm sure there was a little love triangle going on during the preparation of Aida, and Teresa Stoltz did end up with Verdi. So they probably, you know, life's a mess, north or south. I think that's kind of the message here.
There you go.
Yes.
Yeah. Both of these guys born in 1813. And, you know, in the last 200 years, things in Hollywood haven't changed much. You know, it's that same sort of thing that you might read in some sort of tabloid magazine. It was very much a part of that world, too. Love, lust, money.
Well, you know, that goes back to Greek tragedy. I don't think the human condition has changed a whole lot. You know, if they had cave paintings that were more accurate, I think we'd probably have people hitting each other with sticks.
let's direct that into the concert. So here are two men who are passionate about life, and they express that passion in the way they compose music and in the way they live life to the fullest. And so how does that come out in these operas? You know, that this is very passionate music. It is it does touch my, as my mother used to say, it stirs my soul, and it does. You listen to music and it stirs your soul. They had something going on inside of their heads and hearts that they expressed with ink and paper and the human voice.
I think this is very much music that stirs our internal being, and it speaks in different ways. Tannhäuser, which is the story that combines the natural and the supernatural, the humanity and the gods, finds the central character, Heinrich, who is also known as Tannhäuser. we find him having lost a competition, very sad at the beginning, but finds that he retreats into the arms of Venus, who lives on this mountain called the Venusberg, the Hill of Venus. And he's kind of a willing victim of Venus there. And the piece opens with an incredibly passionate overture, which we are doing on this concert, and then goes to this Venusberg music, which shows Tannhäuser in what is essentially a bacchanal or an orgy. He's this kind of willing captive of Venus, but then suddenly he longs to go back to his home in Germany, to his love, Elizabeth, and he is released from the Venusberg by saying, "My salvation rests in Mary, the Mother of God." And with these words, the spell is broken. He's back at the Wartburg, and he's back in the court, and we sing. There's another tournament of song. And nobles enter, and we hear this in the concert. This entrance of the nobles is a beautiful noble kind of march that they come into, and everyone is supposed to sing an original song. This is the assignment to the knights of the court, that they're going to sing this original song on the theme of love's awakening. And other knights praise the purity of love, but Tannhäuser, reverting back to his own old ways, sings about sensual pleasures and Venus. And he's banished again. So Elizabeth protests, but he's sent off to Rome to go and repent. And there's this pilgrim's chorus, which is very famous from the opera Tannhäuser, which we were doing in the concert. And he comes back from his pilgrimage. He returns in rags. He's met on the way by another knight called Wolfram, to whom he confesses that he has no more chance of being forgiven than the Pope's staff has of sprouting leaves. Now that becomes an important line. And in despair, he calls on Venus, who appears and welcomes him back. But in the distance, Tannhäuser sees this funeral procession going by, and it's Elizabeth, and he runs to her and throws himself on her body, saying, "Holy Elizabeth, pray for me." And pilgrims enter and say that the Pope's staff has sprouted leaves. So it's a sign that Tannhäuser has received forgiveness. So in the long run, this opera is about redemption, and it's about a person striving towards an ideal. By contrast, and by turmoil, the Verdi operas are not striving towards an ideal, and they all end in bad deaths. So all the characters sing themselves to death. In Trovatore, in Aida, Trovatore is an incredibly complicated plot line. Gilbert and Sullivan actually made fun of this in Pirates of Penzance, about two twins, one stolen at birth, and a gypsy who is supposed to kill one of the twins accidentally kills her own child, and the first twin grows up as her son, but later is killed by his brother. This is a very convoluted plot, but Verdi makes sense of it. That's the wonder of it. And in the midst of this, there is, in this gypsy story, there is the very famous anvil chorus, which, you know, people are used to hearing with an anvil pounding in the background. And we'll be doing that, of course.
Do you have an official Lehigh University anvil?
Actually, Paul Salerni wants to be the anvil player, but we're auditioning many people. So a little shout out to Paul. But the anvil chorus, which, you know, we can listen to, is one of the great choral orchestral excerpts from opera. So, but it's actually kind of incidental to the plot. It's the gypsies in the background saying, you know, it actually sets a scene for Manrico, the troubadour, the trovatore, to talk to Azucena, his surrogate mother, and then see where the plot goes from there.
Wow, that's intense. Well, I know that you spend a lot of time with your choirs rehearsing the music. Is this also a part of their preparation? Is understanding just a sense of the plot? Do you have the opportunity? I know you have 200 musicians, a whole orchestra. Do you get to spend time with either the students or the rest of the Lehigh University Choral Arts in drawing them into the story? Is that a part of their preparation?
Well, there's two or three parts to that answer. One is that we're an educational institution. So, of course, we want our singers to be smart about what they're singing. Another part of that is that when you are smart about what you're singing, your imagination kicks in. And that actually affects the sound of how you sing. It's one thing to be technically proficient, But once people start singing with an element of imagination, there's much more color in the sound, there's much more interest in the sound, there's much more intelligence in the sound. So, yes, we always try to talk about the background stories, where the pieces are coming from, what are they trying to communicate to an audience? It's not enough to hit notes and rhythms at the right time. You have to actually have something to say on stage. So, of course, we want people to know the plots, basically, but we also want them to know a little bit about the composers, where they're coming from, what their temperaments were like, because that's what brings music to life.
You're listening to WDIY Classics on WDIY Allentown, where listeners supported community public radio. My name is Waldemar Vanofskis, and I'm your host for this Friday edition of WDIY Classics. With me in the studio, Dr. Stephen Sammets, the Ronald J. Ulrich Professor of Music and Director of the Lehigh University Choral Arts. We're talking about a pair of concerts coming up on Friday, April 26th, Saturday, April 27th, Wagner and Verdi. The Lehigh University Choral Arts presenting a program entitled Wagner and Verdi on Friday, April 26th and Saturday, April 27th. 200 singers of the Lehigh University Choral Arts, along with a 60-piece symphony orchestra in this tribute, bicentennial tribute to birthdays of these two titans of the operatic world. Wagner, born in May of 1813. Verdi, born in October of 1813. One from Northern Europe and one from Southern Europe. And it's going to be a fabulous program. More information is available at the Zollner Arts website at zollnerartscenter.org, or you can just Google Zollner Arts Center. You can also call them at 610-7LU-ARTS for more information. And you can find out more information about the concert and the tickets. Along with Dr. Stephen Sammets will be Sun Min Lee, who is in her first year at Lehigh University as the Robert Cutler Professor of Practice in Choral Arts. She also will be conducting part of the program on these concerts on the 26th and 27th. Tell us a little bit about after Wagner comes Verdi, and that's where Sun Min Lee comes in.
Yes, Sun Min will be conducting the Women of Choral Arts in one of the pieces from Verdi's four sacred pieces is Quattro Pezzi Sacri. This is called Lauda alle Vergine, which means laud to the Virgin or praise to the Virgin. It's set for a cappella treble choir. It has this quality of a celestial host praising Mary. It's one of the most beautiful pieces for women's choir in the choral rep. We're following that with another piece from the Quattro Pezzi Sacri, the Stabat Mater, which is a more extended work for orchestra and choir. And we've been speaking about the contrasts of Wagner and Verdi. This is almost like looking at the converse to me of the idea that's presented in Tannhäuser. Tannhäuser was a good example of human emotion and an inherent struggle toward a religious ideal. In Verdi's setting, the Stabat Mater, it's rather the ideal kind of coming down into the human condition. So it's not so much Christ's suffering in the Stabat Mater as Mary's suffering, looking up to her son. And that very human quality, I think, is really what Verdi was so brilliant at expressing. There are hushed kinds of poignant moments where the pain of the mother is, you know, palpable. And then there's these sort of outbursts where he just lets all the drama of the orchestra go as she's looking up at her son on the cross. So it's, I think Wagner was much more about expressing a kind of ideology through his music. Verdi, not so much. Verdi was really much more about expressing the human content.
All right. It's going to be a wonderful concert. And exciting. And Lehigh, just for our listeners, they may not be familiar, the Lehigh Choral Arts is more than just Lehigh students. You have a number of people who come in from the community and sing.
Lehigh Choral Arts is the umbrella organization, that name.
The Choral Union, I guess, is what we're talking about.
The Choral Arts is comprised of the University Choir and Dolce, our women's group, our men's group, the Men's Glee Club, and the Choral Union. The Choral Union is now in its, I think, 28th or 29th. We're coming up on our 30th year soon. So we've been in existence quite a long time. It is open to the entire community. There is no audition required. It's just anybody that wants to come sing these major works can come on a Monday night. And they gather together. We study these works. They're always done with full orchestra. We've essayed certainly, you know, the Verdi Requiem, the Britain War Requiem, Brahms Requiem. We don't just do requiems. We've done staged works. We've been involved with the Matthäus Passion, the St. Matthew Passion of Bach, Debussy's Martyrdom of St. Sebastian, opera nights. Last fall, we did things that we essayed Arabic music with a takht ensemble, a group of Arabic musicians. So we get a huge variety, and anyone is welcome to this. Who wants to come, there's no dues. You come 7:30 on Monday nights. And there's about 140, actually, in the Choral Union, and we supplement this then with 60 or 65 from the student population. So this is a group of people that ranges from ages 17 to about 85, I think.
They were 55 when they started.
They were. We have some founding members in the group. So this is a group that has grown together, and it's very much of the community. And I think it's important that, you know, Lehigh is a very welcoming place for community singers. We find ourselves a home on Baker Stage each Monday night, but then we want to give back to the community in terms of these performances, which are, of course, open to all. And it doesn't make any sense to just rehearse by ourselves. We want to have that audience. We like to hear people come and, you know, applaud what we do. But we also think that the product level is very high. That, you know, when we can do something like the Venusberg or the Pilgrim's Chorus or Verdi's Stabat Mater, we're actually giving a gift to the community. It's a very rich community. It's a very singing community, of course, the Moravian tradition. And, of course, the Bach Choir has been here for many years. So there's a lot of singers in the community. And singers make, of course, a very appreciative audience for singers. So we like to have singers in the audience as well. So, but that's not a prerequisite. Anybody that wants to come and hear these great works is welcome.
All right. The concerts are Friday, April 26th, Saturday, April 27th at Lehigh University Zollner Arts Center on the stage of Baker Hall. 200 singers of the Lehigh University Choral Arts and a symphony orchestra in a tribute to two titans of the operatic world, Richard Wagner and Giuseppe Verdi, both born in 1813. More information is at their website, zollnerartscenter.org, or you can call for tickets, 610-758-2787. That's 7-610-7-LU-ARTS, and you get tickets there. Dr. Stephen Sametz is the Ronald J. Ulrich Professor of Music, Director of the Lehigh University Choral Arts, one of the country's premier choral composers, and has received commissions from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Connecticut Council on the Arts, the Santa Fe Music Festival. He has performed all over the world, conducted choirs all over the world, and has music on many, many recordings, both with the Princeton Singers and also with the a cappella ensemble Chanticleer, not to mention all the various recordings from the Lehigh University Choral Arts that have been put out as well. If people wanted to find some of your music, like from the Lehigh University Choral Arts, I know that the Chanticleer and all that stuff you can find on Amazon.com. Is there any easy way to access CDs from Lehigh University?
It's all on Spotify. I think it's actually on several sites. So if you went to most any site and looked for Lehigh University Choral Arts or Glee Club, tracks would come up. So,
Yes. Great. iTunes as well.
Yes.
You composing anything right now? Working on any projects?
I just had three premieres last weekend. I just went over to Rutgers. They're doing two pieces of mine. I'm working on some things for next year. So there's always something
You're
in the background
going on.
Cooking.
Wow.
But, you know, coming up and conducting a major Wagner overture and having, you know, trumpets in the balcony on the triumphal march from Aida or from the entrance of the nobles. I mean, this is recreating great music. So we both create and recreate at Lehigh.
As a composer, do you get like a sound stuck in your head when you're conducting this, like Wagner and Verdi? Does this run through your head? Does music, new music happen?
It's interesting.
Inspired by this
Yes. Two parts of that. I have a friend, Chen Yi, who's a great composer. She says, Stephen, how do you write anything when you have all these other tunes in your head? And you do have to kind of clear your brain a little bit and find that quieter zone to actually write anything. On the other hand, I learn a great deal in studying Wagner, studying Verdi. You know, pulling these pieces apart, you see the structures, you see the harmonies, you assimilate on some level, and you don't know what'll come out of that. So the more condensed version of that is when I write a piece and have to conduct it, it's terribly schizophrenic. Because everyone says, oh, you wrote that, it must be easy to conduct. And it's actually not. It's like I have to actually study the piece as a conductor, figure out why I did that, and sometimes ask myself, why did I do that? Because it's really hard to conduct. So it's two different parts of your brain, two different skill sets. But I actually learned to be a composer from being a conductor. I think I learned my craft from pulling apart what other people had done before me. So there's two parts of your brain going on all the time.
I don't want to say it's harder to be a choral composer, but I'm gonna imagine if you're just writing music for instruments to play, you don't have to make the words match. Is that a challenge, or do the words make it easier or harder when you're trying to? If I were to write sort of a piece of music just for instruments, I could just make it whatever rhythms I want. I could make it, you know, whatever tempo I want. But if you attach words to that, all of a sudden, somehow they have to come together so that the words make sense.
I think there are people with predilections. Verdi was somebody that used words all the time. He's basically an opera composer, a choral composer. Wagner is essentially somebody who used words all the time. There's vast stretches of orchestral writing, but he was motivated pretty much by setting a text. And text can give you momentum in a very palpable way. You know, I'm building a scene, it has to go here, you know the music. It's a cinematographic approach almost. So text can be a great help in writing. And when you say you change the words, you're also, the great thing about choral music is every time you change a word, you're changing a vowel. And every time you change a vowel, you're changing a color in your voice. So an oboe might play a line with a certain variance of color, but a singer, every time you change the vowel in your voice, you're actually kind of changing the timbre a little bit. So choirs are great at this. I mean, you can change the sound of a choir merely by the word they're all on, or if they're on different words, it'll sound slightly less homogeneous. So you get used to that kind of challenge. Verdi, of course, was the master of setting text and melody. Wagner is more of a harmonist, but he wrote all his own text. So he was starting very much from within with the text and the music at the same time. So I think certain composers go for different kinds of ideas.
Well, we look forward to hearing your next premiere here in the Lehigh Valley sometime real soon. Again, we're visiting with Dr. Stephen Sametz. He is the director of the Lehigh University Choral Arts. He'll be conducting a pair of concerts Friday, April 26th and Saturday, April 27th at Lehigh University's Zollner Arts Center. In the Baker Hall, 200 singers of the Lehigh University Choral Arts, and along with the Symphony Orchestra, a tribute to the birthdays of Wagner and Verdi. More information is at zollnerartscenter.org. You can also call the box office, 610-758-2787. That's 610-7LU-ARTS. Dr. Sametz, it's always a pleasure, and we wish you all the best. Have a great concert and a great end of the school year.
Thank you. We're off to Hawaii after that on tour, so well, we're not quite done yet.
Safe travels, bon voyage, and we look forward
to aloha.
Yes. Aloha, that too. Have a safe trip. We look forward to having you back here again.
Thank you so
much. This is WDIY Classics on listener-supported Community Public Radio.